The GI Research Foundation was able to produce this podcast with a generous sponsorship from Metro Infusion Centers.
Hi, and welcome to Visceral, a podcast from the GI Research Foundation. Last month, we kicked off this two-part series, the 10 critical challenges facing IBD patients and providers. The first episode covered challenges 1 through 5, including important information about patient and provider communications. You can catch part 1 wherever you listen to podcasts. Hit subscribe and you'll always be the first to know when new episodes are out. In this episode, part 2, we'll dig into challenges 6 through 10. Now, here's our host, Anna Gomberg.
Today, we have a very special guest, one of my most favorite people, Dr. David Rubin. Dr. Rubin is the Joseph B. Kirzner Professor of Medicine and Chief of the Section of Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition at the University of Chicago Medicine, where he also serves as the Director of the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Center. He was recently elected the Chair of the International Organization for the Study of Inflammatory Bowel Disease, IOIBD, an organization whose mission is to promote the health of people with IBD worldwide by setting the direction for patient care, education, and research. And we are so fortunate to have Dr. Rubin with us today. He's going to lead us through something that experts in IBD everywhere talk about all the time, addressing the state of inflammatory bowel disease right here, right now, and the top 10 challenges faced by healthcare providers, researchers, and patients living with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. Welcome, Dr. Rubin. We are so glad that you are here, and we cannot wait to hear what you have to share with us.
Well, hi, Annie. Thank you for having me, and I want to thank the Gastrointestinal Research Foundation for hosting this really important discussion. I have been thinking a lot about where we are in the world of IBD. I've been doing this for a while now, as you know, and I've had the privilege to gain some perspective on both the progress we've made, which is considerable, and the additional work we have left to do, which is also considerable. I was asked at a meeting in Paris recently to speak to the challenges in IBD, and that was all the instruction I was given, was just the title. And it was a wonderful title because it stimulated me to organize my thoughts into what I think are the 10 challenges facing us in inflammatory bowel disease at the end of 2025 and moving into 2026. And I appreciate the opportunity to share an updated version of that for your listeners and for all those out there who are motivated and understand some of this. I encourage you to continue the hard work that we have left in front of us and to continue supporting the organizations like the GI Research Foundation that are working to solve these challenges. So let's get right into it. The sixth challenge that I've outlined, and I think is a really important one, is we haven't figured out how to incorporate diet into our management across the spectrum of the diseases. It's the number one thing people want to know about. What should I eat? What shouldn't I eat? Can I use diet to treat my disease? And it remains a big challenge in understanding the evidence and understanding how to do it. There certainly are data to support diet for children with IBD, and that's specifically and most oftenly Crohn's disease, where if we remove some of the components of the diet and provide a stripped down elemental diet or even a partial elemental diet, we can in fact induce some control of the disease. That works to variable extents, but less well studied in adults as well. But it's not a sustainable strategy. It doesn't provide a good quality of life over long term. And as soon as it's stripped away, the disease tends to come right back. So we need to figure that part out. But we're also learning other parts about diet that I think are really important. Diet does improve quality of life, and there are simple adjustments that can be recommended that might make people feel better. But if paired with the treat-to-target strategy and the recognition that we still have to treat inflammation effectively, I think of it as something that is complementary and adjuvant to what we're doing otherwise. We also have some really innovative work that's been done more recently looking at such things as emulsifiers, which are ingredients in some of our foods that give them shelf life or help things remain mixed in a stable way. And emulsifiers, we have observed, break down the mucus lining and may expose the gut immune system to more antigens and trigger some inflammation. And a really important study was presented this past year looking at elimination or at least reduction of emulsifiers in a controlled way in a group of people with mild Crohn's. And they saw not only improvement in symptoms, but it downregulated some of the inflammation. So there's some good work going on. There's a lot more needed. And we need to make sure that we're paying careful attention to the distinction between diet, which is what people eat, and nutrition, which is what they need, and making sure we don't end up with people malnourished because of restrictive diets, which is not our strategy of management. So it's a big challenge that remains. The seventh of 10 challenges is that we are having difficulty recruiting into clinical trials. We have all these new options and new ideas and new mechanisms of action or improved and engineered better mechanisms of existing targets, but we are having difficulty completing clinical trials. This is in part because we have an embarrassment of riches in the availability of many therapies in places like the United States and Western Europe. But it also is a challenge because, of course, we want to do things better and we need good evidence to drive change and to move us forward. So there's been a shift to recruitment in Eastern Europe, in Asia, places that don't have access to a lot of therapies, which raises a whole bunch of ethical challenges to global clinical trial design and execution. But we also need to address the elephants in the room. Patients don't want to be exposed to placebo. And other than when we have a very new mechanism that requires a careful placebo comparator, I think there are some strategies and types of designs that we can use now in 2025, 2026 that will avoid that and enable us to have comparator arms of active therapy. And we need to educate patients and we need to move our field forward to include more people in trials so that we can get better evidence to drive our field forward. Now, some of this, of course, too, is understanding where are the gaps. Let's address the gaps in our field with trials that are pragmatic and are thoughtful about how to take care of these people and not only develop me-too drugs and continue to do the same things, even if they're a bit better. We want to do something new and we need to think about who's going to benefit and then design a trial that makes sense. This does require as well that we work hand in hand with industry, that's the pharmaceutical companies, and hand in hand with our regulatory agencies, that's the FDA in the US and others around the world, so that they can adopt and understand that patients don't want a colonoscopy at 3 months for their clinical trial participation. And they're not excited about being in a placebo arm. So we've designed some newer ways to do this, including something called a patient preference trial, where there are two arms in the trial that seem equally good, and we let the patient choose which one they might be in. There are ways to do this with statistical power and still get the information we need and to do it in a successful manner. So stay tuned on that, and hopefully we're going to continue addressing that very important challenge. The eighth challenge of 10, we can't afford IBD. And what I mean by that, of course, which sounds obvious to everyone, I'm sure, if you're living with IBD, is that individuals who have active disease can't afford to be missing work and not being present for parts of their life or their family, but also the therapies have become so expensive. And it's not just the individuals, even with co-pays and patient assistance, it's also expensive to society. And it's an acknowledgement that the cost of these therapies is driving the overall challenge in the field of getting people what they need, having access to therapies, and the recognition that the expensive treatments that have made a big difference to people are not available to everybody is something that we must confront and think more about. In addition, you could argue, well, the cost of the therapies and the money that's being made drives the next new therapy and the next breakthrough. I certainly understand and agree with that, but there are many ways we could improve how insurance companies interact with us and how we are using resources in more effective and efficient ways. So I'm not here to say the insurance companies are all the bad guys here. I really want to emphasize that we need to figure out better ways to use the resources we have. And we also need to look really very clear-eyed at the people who don't have access to therapy and who don't have access to expertise and try to solve for those problems. And this is true around the world as well, as I hinted at in my comment about the ethics of global clinical trials, taking advantage of people who don't have access to therapies so that they're more likely to be in a trial. Only works if you're then going to make that therapy available for all the people in that country who need the therapies subsequently.
Today's episode is made possible by Metro Infusion Centers. Metro Infusion Centers, with over 220 infusion centers nationwide, providing trusted and life-saving therapies to patients for over 30 years in a comfortable and cost-effective environment.
The ninth challenge that I identified in the list is that we need to focus more on prevention. Prevention in IBD takes many flavors and forms. At the very basic, it's prevention of relapse, which is what maintenance is supposed to be. Many people think of maintenance and needing maintenance therapy in IBD, which is a cornerstone of our standard management, as being taking care of a chronic disease that's chronically active by taking chronic medicine. That's actually not what maintenance of remission is supposed to be. Maintenance of remission is about prevention of relapse over time and prevention of progression of the disease to complications. So that's prevention. But what about prevention of recurrence after surgery? So one of the fundamental features of Crohn's disease, and one we still haven't figured out, is that the disease can come back after you've had a bowel resection and when the bowel segments are sewn back together. We don't know why this happens. We have some clues, but we've gotten very good at preventing it and monitoring for it. So we've learned, for example, that after a surgical resection of a segment of bowel in Crohn's that's active and scarred or inflamed, we can predict the likelihood of recurrence, and we can use our therapies, which are much more effective as preventive agents than they are when we're trying to catch up after there's already been progression or complications. There's also the recurrence of inflammation that occurs in people with ulcerative colitis who have a colectomy with a J pouch. We know that about 50% of them will have some inflammation of the J pouch at least once. 10% may have more chronic inflammation in the J pouch. That's because the individual still has IBD. It's just in a new place. So if we know that there's a risk of this developing, and we know that people can be predicted to have it in some situations, we should have a better strategy for preventing it. And there's ongoing work that's going on to try to figure that out. And of course, what you might have thought I was thinking about was prevention of the disease onset altogether. The good news is that there's some incredible work going on around the world to try to figure this out. Some of it is being led by something called the GEM study, which is genetics, environment, and microbiome, led by our colleague Ken Cretoro in Toronto, but in a global effort to recruit unaffected siblings of people with Crohn's disease and then follow them over time. They've been able to identify a whole bunch of pre-diagnosis markers and some predictive value to know who may develop Crohn's. We recognize already from lots of old studies that the highest risk of developing Crohn's disease is having a sibling with Crohn's disease. Well, what they've done is they've identified genetic markers, they've identified functional markers in terms of how the bowel reacts and how it's leaky or not, is a term many of you may have heard, but also looking at subclinical markers of inflammation to know before the person has any symptoms or damage that they're in fact starting to become inflamed. Learning from diabetes, we can apply a strategy to then try to prevent the disease. And that's underway. We're working hard to develop that, to design it. That's in conjunction with the Mount Sinai Hospital in New York and a group of people around the world, including the University of Chicago. I do want to highlight that there's another study called INTERCEPT, which is being performed in Europe, that is going to try to do the same thing using a therapy to try to prevent onset. So I want to acknowledge our great colleagues around the world who are working on this, and that's an exciting area, but we need better approaches to doing so. So lots to do there. I've already hinted as well about wearables and other ways to understand when the disease is recurring so we can prevent clinical relapse. And I think you're going to see a lot more of this in the next year. And my 10th of 10 challenges for us to think about is to make sure that people like me are training my replacements, our replacements in the field, recognizing that we need to recruit the smartest people to come into GI and work in inflammatory bowel disease. We need to support them properly through all of their training, and we have to provide them with adequate resources so that they can be in the labs doing that hard work, so that they can get the skill sets necessary to become successful and to make the next discoveries. And I think one of the most important things we do in our life is to pass on what we've done well to the next generation, but also to acknowledge our limitations and look to a better future by having the next generation take over for us. And so our 10th of 10 challenge is to identify and train our replacements. And I'm happy to say and optimistic to say that there's an amazingly smart group of people coming up in the ranks in IBD, and there is a very bright future for us coming. So I hope that you have thought about these challenges with me today. If you're in a position to impact these challenges, I encourage you to go for it. And I also will reflect again that we all have to be working together. So if you can support the Gastrointestinal Research Foundation, if you are in industry or you're a physician or a physician scientist working in these fields, I want to encourage everyone to continue rowing in the same direction. And I look forward to an ongoing discussion about solving all these problems. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rubin, for sharing your valuable time with us. And all of these insights are so important for anyone who is living with IBD or studying it or hoping to make a difference in the lives of those who are living with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis in 2025. We are so grateful. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast Visceral from the GI Research Foundation. This episode was written, edited, and produced by me, Anna Gomberg, and edited and mixed by Luke Pahalski. Special thanks to the talented Michael Collins Dowden, who composed our theme music, and executive producer Allison Thielen. We hope you will join us next time, and until then, to access other podcasts and learn more about research to treat, prevent, and cure digestive diseases, please visit the website at giresearchfoundation.org. Please like and subscribe to Visceral on all your favorite podcast platforms. And until next time, listen to your gut. Thank you again to our sponsors, Metro Infusion Centers.